Paula Poundstone is a comedian and a regular panelist on NPR's weekly comedy news show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She'll be performing in Reno this Saturday. Ahead of that event, KUNR's Michelle Rivera chatted with Poundstone about her career and her new podcast.
Good afternoon, Paula. This is Michelle Rivera. How are you?
Hey, Michelle. Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Many of our listeners are really excited you're coming to town June 1st to the Pioneer Center for the Arts. Now, you have a book out. It's the totally unscientific study of the search for human happiness. And
yes.
It came up in the book that Reno was a place that one character didn't even want to talk about. Hopefully you've had better experiences here. Anything memorable?
You know, it all runs together after a while. I've been to Reno a number of times. I don't recall anything bad happening, but I can't remember anymore. I mean, every weekend I'm in like two or three different places. So when I check in at the Los Angeles airport and I get to the ticket counter and they say to me, where are you going? I stare at them for a brief few seconds with a dull, lifeless look on my face before I say, hold on. And I take a piece of paper out of my pocket that has the information on it.
Your itinerary helps you juggle all that. With 40 years in the industry, would you say that you can name the biggest challenge to juggle? Is it the kids, the cats, or your career?
Oh, kids are the hardest.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, heavens. Yeah. Now the young adults and no one's at home. But when my kids were little, I went to work to get rest. Yeah, raising kids is an impossibly difficult job.
I want to thank you. You sent out book plates for your latest book. I was the recipient of one of those, and you told me, may things always strike me funny. And then you drew a picture of a vacuum cleaner. Was that related to the unscientific study of getting organized? Or just a cute drawing?
No, I just loved to vacuum.
Really?
I've always been a big vacuumer. When I was young, when I was, 18, I worked at I lived in a rooming house in Boston, in the Back Bay in Boston, a little teeny rooming house. And I worked at a restaurant at bus tables and did sort of janitorial work in the restaurant. And on Christmas Day, as a special Christmas gift to myself, I walked to the restaurant. I had keys, and it was closed that day. I walked to the restaurant. Took their upright vacuum cleaner back to my, walked back. I know it was like 12 blocks or so. Walked back carrying this upright vacuum cleaner up. My room was a 5-floor walk up. There were no elevators. Walk up 5 floors with this vacuum cleaner, vacuumed my room, and then took it back to the restaurant. That's how much I love to vacuum.
That's incredible. I suppose then you were really happy to use their industrial vacuum, because it's not like the ones at home.
Oh, man, I didn't own one of my own. That would be far too... I don't own any vacuum cleaners. That would be too costly for my budget at the time. But, yeah, to use that beautiful thoroughbred of a vacuum cleaner was... I don't know. There's just something about vacuuming that's so satisfying. I do enjoy sweeping as well, but, you know, this takes more time.
Of course.
And now I have 13 cats, and so, vacuuming without it, we would just suffocate from the, I have 13 cats and 2 dogs. The fur would just sort of go in like drifts in the corners of the house if we didn't vacuum every day. It's a lot of work. Plus, we have a puppy right now. I got a puppy a month ago, so I get this dog she was 10 weeks old. I get this puppy. I fly to Chicago. I pick up the puppy. I go back to the Chicago airport, right, to go home to L.A. I'd already been on the road for a few days. And there was a month ago, there was a big catastrophic day of travel that day where there was bad weather all over the country and people were stuck wherever they were for a couple of days. So me and the puppy ended up stuck in the Chicago airport for almost 24 hours. But because it's part golden retriever and part Newfoundland, and it was in this little teeny carrier, it was like Jiffy Pop. It was like making microwave popcorn. It was like every few seconds you could see the bag explode a little bit. But the puppy was growing so fast that within 24 hours it barely fit in that carrier, and I was, I had paid money so that you could put it under the seat in front of you. Well, it really didn't fit under the seat in front of me anymore because it just grew so fast. It's going to be an enormous dog. I will say, though, the flight attendant was so nice. She came over. She came over and said, "Do you want ice chips for the dog?" Which I honestly had never even thought about. But the dog loved the ice chips, and mercifully, she slept almost the whole way. We were stuck in the airport for so long, and the lines were everywhere, and there were long, long lines. And you know, a bad travel day is kind of traumatizing for everyone. So that puppy was like the emotional support puppy in the Chicago airport that day. And now she just can't wait to travel again.
If you get to take some of the kids, the pets, anybody with you on tour, it must be more exciting. I imagine when you end your shows with, "Okay, I gotta go," I'm like, where does Paula go?
Oh, I don't go anywhere exciting. Thing is, I go back to the hotel room, and of course I have to pack and do paperwork and things like that because, you know, you do have to pay taxes. And so I have to keep track of what I'm doing and what I earn and all that sort of thing. And I have to send it to honest accountants that file. They say how much I've earned so that I can pay my fair share for all the services that we all pitch in on as citizens.
Right.
It's kind of a new idea. And so I go back to my hotel room. But the other thing is I travel very early in the morning, so I might only get an hour or two of sleep. I often get up to go the next morning at, like, you know, 3:30 or 4 or something. It gets ugly. And
good.
I just sleep on the airplane, and I have a new system,
yeah,
which is I just put a blanket over my head. And I have a baseball cap. I always wear a baseball cap, and so there's a little – the visor creates a little open space in there. And that way there, no one sees, like, my mouth hanging open. It's great.
Well, and you have to dream so that you can think of new ways to answer questions. Now, you've got the podcast that you've been working on.
It's called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. I mean, the thing about a podcast at this point in our lives is that everyone has one. I mean, we as mammals, you know, we have fur, we breathe oxygen, we don't eat our young, and we have a podcast. It's one of the ways that you can know that you're a person. Somebody, a fan, asked me the other day if we're having as good a time as we sound like we're having when we make this podcast. And I said, yeah, we are. You'd have to be because, trust me, it doesn't pay any money. You would have to be genuinely enjoying it, or there is no good reason to do it. So it's me and my partner, Adam Felber. We met on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me years ago. And although we both still continue to do Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we also do a weekly podcast called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
And your big word of the day is always interesting and a challenge.
I'm trying so hard to expand my vocabulary because on the off chance that I become president, I'd like to have an intelligent-sounding vocabulary. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but still, I haven't been able to, you know, I know the definitions. I haven't been able to casually spill them into conversation yet. But that, you know, that's another step altogether.
Right. Like, I learned how to pronounce inchoate from you.
You know what?
I learned
from that experience. I had always thought it was inchoate.
That's what it looks like.
For foolish. I mean, I never used it anyways, but yeah, indeed it's inchoate. Yeah.
And now
it took me by surprise.
And then do you think now, I mean, there's no longer a gold watch. Your career is going to hit 50 years in another decade. You still got some time to think about it. But if you don't retire, I know Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me called you up and offered you a job. Do you have plans for what you're going to keep doing over time? Is it going to be comedy and voiceovers and this sort of thing?
Yeah, I hope nothing changes. I have the best job in the entire world. And, you know, the only thing that's really changed over the years is that with age did come the wisdom that I have the best job in the entire world. It's just so much fun. I consider myself a proud member of the endorphin production industry. And, you know, the idea that I get to go do shows and people come out and laugh, and it's a bit of an oasis, especially now, where, you know, I think everybody for that, you know, 2 hours or so, you know, feels like they were sort of lifted. Their burdens were lifted for at least 2 hours. I don't know, whatever it was. You know, I had this problem or I had that problem or that problem or that challenge. And I was able to come to the show and forget about it for a little while. I just love that. And it works that way for me, too, by the way.
you obviously get something back from doing this. I love how you ask people what they do. And you're genuinely just as curious about everyone else there. Half of your act can be talking to the audience.
In fact, where were they just? Seattle. I was in Seattle the other night. And I asked the guy what he did for a living, and it was some sort of software thing, you know. And just before I glazed over, because I don't really get the software thing, I think I asked him, you know, what else he did or what he did in his spare time or whatever. And he said he grew wheat. And I'm like, well, that's not really a part-time job, sir. I've never known, like, a wheat hobbyist. And when I pressed him on it, when I got a little further down the road with him, it turned out he didn't personally grow the wheat. He drives during the wheat harvesting season to different locations to watch people harvest wheat. And it was the first, you know, as you said, I have been doing this for 40 years. It'll be 40 years next month.
Wow.
It was the first wheat watcher I've ever met. I mean, some of the jobs, a lot of times, I mean, there's a good deal of variety, but certainly software developer, that one I encounter a lot. And to this day, I don't really know what to say to anybody who's a software developer. I try to understand it. I try to ask them questions about it, but it's not like I've ever cracked that nut. But not everything is, like, it's not always the same job that I hear about. Usually it's fairly unique. Like, I've only gotten a couple of undertakers in my life. But this wheat watcher thing, that was entirely new to me. Afterwards, him and his wife came up to me in the meet and greet line. And she, too, didn't really understand the wheat watching trips. But, you know, she was supportive. He may not even be a nobody listens to Paula Poundstone listener. He may just be too active for that, what with watching the wheat and all.
Thank you so much for your time with me on KUNR Public Radio today. Paula Poundstone, we are excited for you to join us in Reno June 1st at the Pioneer Center for the Arts.
Oh, I can't wait to come to Reno. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Paula.
Take care.
That was KUNR's Michelle Rivera speaking with Paula Poundstone, who will be performing at the Pioneer Center in Reno this Saturday at 8 p.m. Find more information at paulapoundstone.com. As a note of disclosure, Martin Media, the promoter of Poundstone's show, is an underwriter on KUNR.